Hello, and once again, welcome to the Best Vibrance Podcast. I am your host, Stephen Breitbach. I am the founder of Hivemind Bee Pollen. You can find us on the web at www.hivemindpollen.com. There you will find a lot of information about fresh bee pollen, the nutritional benefits, the nutritional value of bee pollen. You can also order it from our website, and we will ship it directly to you. Our bee pollen comes from apiaries in Northern California, fourth-generation beekeepers, 100-year-old apiaries, pollinating some of the old orchards of Northern California. This pollen is vacuum-packed fresh and shipped directly to you. Today's guest, we have a very special guest. His name is Dr. Noah Wilson Rich, and he is a very influential researcher in the field of apiary science, particularly studying urban beekeeping. He started Best Bees Company in Boston, where he outfits beehives in the New England and New York areas. Very influential, very important work that he's doing. And we've got him here, right here, on the Best Vibrance Podcast. Without further ado, here is Dr. Noah Wilson Rich.
Okay, I believe we're recording. Let's see here. I have with me Noah Wilson Rich. He's the. I have my introduction here. Let me pull that up real quick. This is just being recorded. I'm going to edit it down to what sounds good. I'll okay. get rid of all the ums and ahs, and there'll be more of those on my part than yours, because you seem to be like a seasoned public speaker. So,
well, thanks.
No, I'm real impressed by the work that you've done so far. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate that.
So you're in the field today?
I am. Yes. Yeah. It's funny. We've got, let me think, maybe about a dozen beekeepers on working today. And this morning we were all at our urban beekeeping laboratory and the bee sanctuary. That's our headquarters. So we're all kind of loading up our vans and then splitting up in different directions. We're managing, I would say, about 350 beehives across five different states these days.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a heroic effort, but it's a lot of fun.
And this is all part of your business, the Best Bees Company.
That's right, yeah. So we deliver, install, and manage beehives in exchange for research funding. And some of the beekeepers today were not managing client beehives. They were going out to do some field research trials. Our active season for beekeeping in New England between March and October, that's when the queen's actively laying eggs. And so around this time of year, we're starting our winterizing preparations. And, you know, with honeybees, they don't hibernate. They're just less active. They're just like people, really. So in the wintertime, you know, they're still, like, awake. They just tend to cuddle for warmth, and they eat honey for fuel. And, you know, when it's a warmer day, they'll take advantage of that weather and go out and go to the bathroom, leave the hive for their cleansing flight, and they'll come on back and get back to cuddling.
Wow. I have with me on the line, Noah Wilson Rich is the author of 14 scientific publications. He's a full-time faculty member in the biology department at Simmons College, a lecturer in the biology department at Northeastern University, Boston, and the founder and chief scientific officer of Best Bees Company. Noah founded Best Bees Company while studying for his PhD at Tufts University. Best Bees supplies gardeners and other interested parties in Boston and New York City with beehives and the resources, materials, and consultation for their upkeep. This service, which has been widely hailed as groundbreaking work in urban beekeeping, funds additional research into bee disease, immune function, and health. In 2012, Noah Wilson Rich gave the number one TED Talk on bees entitled Every City Needs Healthy Bees, which went viral online with over 250,000 views within a few months and fueled a modern movement towards small-scale independent beekeeping, or what has become known as backyard beekeeping. Noah Wilson Rich is the author of The Bee, A Natural History, published by Princeton University Press and is now available on Amazon.com. Noah is also in the midst of a book tour to promote his book, his company, his research into honeybees' behavior, and shedding some light on the issues surrounding honeybees. Noah Wilson-Rich, it is truly an honor to have you on the Best Vibrance, and I want to welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I know that's kind of a lengthy introduction. You've been a very, very busy man. You teach biology at a major university. You run a bee company, and you wrote a book, and you're on a book tour. Is that correct? You're doing all these things at the same time?
That's right, yeah. I technically have three jobs right now between the Best Bees Company and overseeing all that research, and then also teaching a class on evolution at Northeastern University, and then also teaching a class on animal behavior at Simmons College.
Yes,
and the book tour.
Fantastic. Where do you get the energy to do all of that stuff?
I'm a tired man. I go to bed early.
I hope you're taking some of the raw honey from those hives and some of the pollen and incorporating that into your diet, because you almost need to have that energy. You have the same energy level as the bees themselves.
I don't know about that. They're pretty active as well, but I do I put some honey on my fruit and nut pancakes on the weekends, and that helps.
So you, through this research, you put beehives, people's residents, you know, somebody will say, hey, Noah, I'd like to have a beehive on my backyard. You would come and outfit them with a beehive and then come in and consult them and basically manage the hive for them.
That's right. Yeah, we do it all. Full service beekeeping. The information, I guess, in details at our website is bestbees.com, and then we keep updates going on our Twitter and Facebook pages and Pinterest and all those social media sites to show people different images and approaches for how we can set up beehives on a rooftop or a deck or ground level. We build all the beehives by hand, and then we will deliver them to whatever site, be it home or a hotel, restaurant, school, really anything. And then we'll install the bees and manage them and harvest honey for the clients. It's all in exchange for funding for our research to improve bee health.
So you currently have about 350 hives placed in an area that covers five states in the New England area.
Yep, that's right.
And this ranges from like highly condensed urban areas like New York City to maybe like some estate in Connecticut or something. You're outfitting people with beehives basically all over in all different types of environments.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've got two offices, one in Boston in the South End and one in Brooklyn, New York. And we've got some regional locations, so smaller offices, one on Martha's Vineyard, one on Cape Cod, one in Connecticut. And so, you know, we've got our beekeepers. There's, I think, 17 on staff at the moment who just kind of circle around the areas and just visiting beehives. One thing that's pretty cool is we record data on an app that we wrote the code for. So we built our own software, and our beekeepers will fill in a form that then does real-time charting and a lot of fun features, so we can know how every single beehive is doing at any given time just in an app. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. You're really in this for the data. You're in this for the research. It's not so much a business where it's not for profit. You're looking to gather information and knowledge about honeybees so that we can strengthen our populations and even decentralize the idea of beekeeping and bring it the way it used to be, where there was a lot of different beehives and a lot of different properties and maintained by a variety of people, and mostly everybody, you know, back in the day. And over years we've clearly moved away from that, but maybe that there's benefits in that relationship between humans and honeybees. I think what you're doing is very important work, and it's phenomenal. And if you didn't exist, we'd have to create somebody like you, because what you're doing is, in the data that you're gathering, is really critical. It's crucial.
Well, yeah, it's very, very kind of you to say that. There are many researchers who are doing really great stuff with honeybees and other types of bees and other types of pollinators. Yeah, and as you said, everything we do is very much data-driven. That's why we're really into recording data on all of our hives, because that can help us do prospective studies with land use and bee and pollinator health, but also even to look back and say, okay, well, maybe there was something we missed, and maybe there's some trends with land use or any other factors that can give us a little bit more information as to how we can make bees and beekeeping better.
So how are the health of the hives in that you maintain, the 350 hives? Are they doing well?
Yeah, they are doing well, I'm proud to say, knock on wood. We do all organic practices, so sometimes that can be a challenge, especially in the face of many different diseases that infect bees. Bees are infected by a whole plethora of different types of infections, viruses, bacteria, fungus, arthropods. So that's one of the three main threats to bees, diseases. The other two are chemicals, such as pesticides, fungicides, herbicides. And the third is habitat loss, just not enough flowers out there anymore. So those are the three big things that affect bee health.
Right. So it's important to plant a lot of flowers around.
Yes.
Not only does it beautify your home and your surroundings and make you feel good and it smells good, but it's also providing a haven for bees to come and gather some food or some nourishment.
Sure, and anybody can do that, whether you have property or not. So for those who live in cities, sometimes thinking, I don't have any room to plant flowers. Well, what if you just go to the side of the highway and you plant some native seeds there even? Anybody can play a role in helping our bees and pollinators.
Right. Back when I was growing up, I kind of grew up in kind of a suburban small town kind of thing. And, if you had a dandelion in your front yard, it was considered like a horrendous thing. It's like, oh, my God. But when you think about it, those are the first bloomers in spring, and those are the bees. Those are the things that the bees are searching for coming
right.
up. If we had dandelions everywhere and didn't consider them a curse, they're actually quite nutritious, by the way.
Steve, it's such an important message.
Yeah. So, it's the way we've been kind of trained to think and see things and see nature and see the world and environment around us. And maybe, there's another way to look at it. Not as obvious, but it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure to have you on. I think there's a lot going on with you, and we'd love to have you on more often if you're willing to be a guest. What I'm trying to do here with the Best Vibrance podcast is to create a community for bee activism, bee awareness, and just so people can become more educated and familiar with what's happening, because there's a groundswell happening, and I think you see it as well. All around us, people are becoming more aware and conscious of not only the health of honeybees, but also the health benefits that can be derived from products of the hive.
Absolutely. We work on some research projects relating to bee products and how they can help human health. We're also doing some West Coast book tour dates in the spring. So there's some other opportunities to possibly collaborate then as well. We're happy to help however possible.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Do you take bee pollen by any chance? Have you tried, do you sample the pollen from the bees bring back?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So we've interacted with bee pollen in a couple of ways. So there's a great store in Cambridge, Massachusetts called Follow the Honey. And it's a honey store. And in addition to honey, they sell other bee products. So you can get fresh local pollen there in a jar. Fantastic. We also did a research study last summer with the Harvard School of Public Health where we sampled pollen from our beehives and sent it in for pesticide analysis to try to see if there were any areas of Massachusetts and New England where there might be an overabundance of pesticides or some places where there might not be as many. So, we've got a lot of different capacities for honey and pollen as well, and it's important work.
Very much so. So you're able to kind of isolate areas that may, the pollen that comes back may have a little more contamination, and other places it may be more pure. So then you'd know to move your bees over to those areas that are.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very, very important, groundbreaking work. And as we gain more and more knowledge through your work and your leadership in this, we're going to pull ourselves through these. It's kind of perceived as a growing crisis.
Yeah.
And you penned an op-ed piece in the New York Times that was a couple of weeks ago in September.
That's right.
And you put a hopeful, optimistic slant on the article.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, it's interesting. As a researcher, I have access to unpublished data, I guess one could say. And so we're always talking with other researchers saying, well, what are you finding? Are you seeing this? And that crosstalk I found over the past few years has really come to an agreement that colony collapse disorder, which is this phenomenon that started around 2006 in America where honeybees were vanishing on top of just dying. We weren't finding dead bodies. amazing phenomenon, as we call it, it seems to have stopped about 3 years ago. We haven't seen a confirmed case of colony collapse disorder in the United States in about 3 years now. But that's not to say that bees are doing all right. It's just that now we're finding the dead bodies. They're dying from other things. So we still need to stay vigilant on how we can improve our bee health across the country.
Yeah, so the colony collapse disorder was more focused on this, the idea that the bees simply vanishing mysteriously. And now we're just faced with the collapse disorder could be expanded to, well, the colonies are still collapsing, but now there's dead bodies here. We have, you know, we have evidence of what, you know, what has happened. Whereas in the past, it was a complete mystery.
That's right. Yeah, it's an ever-changing story. So that's why it's great to have many researchers on it. But unfortunately, we still don't have a lot of research funding available to those researchers. So there's very much more work to be done.
You had mentioned in that article, and I thought this was quite interesting, is that this has happened in the past. We have in recorded history evidence of these mysterious bee die-offs. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. And it's been not just in the United States, but also in Europe. And going back, you know, over 1,000 years, it's pretty incredible. They're not all caused by the same thing, but there have been these mass mortality events. And not all of them are understood. So, you know, who knows? Maybe colony collapse disorder is another blip on that radar. Maybe it will happen again, or maybe we could be proactive in trying to do everything we can to keep bees healthy to prevent any further blips.
Mm-hmm.
How many more warnings do we need?
Yeah, exactly. And it is a warning. It's maybe it's one of these immunomechanisms of the planet Earth that's saying, hey, you know, snap out of it, wake up, you know, look at this.
That's right.
And then suddenly the people, and this was in recorded history, where they realize, oh, my God, we've lost a tremendous amount of our bees. We need to take care of them, and we need to strengthen those populations.
Mm-hmm. Yes, agreed.
And we could be in a period like that now because of this consciousness awakening to bees. And then one thing about you, I've read your bio and stuff, and I've heard you talk about how you got into this. And you didn't really like set out, you know, I'm a bug specialist. I want to go and do this. Pretty much the opposite. It kind of chose you. I mean, it had a way of falling into it, and just by following a path, it led you to this. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. I wasn't the sort of kid who grew up playing with bugs and in the dirt. I was born in Manhattan, and I grew up in Connecticut. And, you know, certainly Connecticut has some beautiful forested areas. But I really was sort of a typical kid, and I went to college, and I was pre-med for my father. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And so he said, go get your MD, son, then we'll talk. And I would say, Dad, I need to talk now. So, you know, it didn't really work out so well. I was kind of in the biology major. And so I had an inspirational teacher. She taught a course called sociobiology. Her name is Rebecca Rosengauss. She's at Northeastern University. She and I are currently on faculty together, which has been a really fun kind of roundabout turn of events. But she encouraged me to think about other graduate school programs and to take my interest in medicine, but to go outside and work with social animals and, you know, bees. So she encouraged me to apply to a grad program at Tufts, and I did that, and I got in and started working with bees in 2005. And then in 2006, when bees started vanishing, people came to me and they said, what's happening? And
right.
I said, oh my gosh, I just started this PhD program. I don't know, but
right.
It certainly drove me to find out.
Suddenly you're the go-to guy for information
yeah.
on bees. Suddenly you're the bee expert. You just kind of
That's right.
found yourself in that position. And it's
yep,
funny
I
how one
it out. Yeah.
It's funny how your interaction with one person can have that kind of change on your life and your life
it's
direction.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean everybody's life story has a story to it, and that just happens to be my strange way of getting into the world of bees. It's been
yeah.
an amazing journey.
It really is, and it's definitely a journey, and it happens to various people at different times and in different ways.
Yes.
And so that's kind of what I'm doing here on the Best Vibrance here is creating a podcast of individuals who have that kind of that connection with honeybees in some way that almost, you know, this is the way I see it too. The bee pollen business is not something I woke up, you know, when I was young and said, hey, I want to do this. It's something that a chain of events leads you to it and suddenly you're in it. And I kind of had a similar experience. Suddenly I was considered an expert in honeybees because I was somebody who enjoyed bee pollen and was receiving great benefits from it.
That's wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, and so it just kind of took off from there. But it's really, like yourself, I mean, you're in a different, obviously you're in academia, so you have different avenues to pursue. In my arena, it's more like an entrepreneurship. And
mm-hmm.
my association with the honeybees in this regard has like just been amazing, just the synchronicities and the intuitive things that are associated with honeybees. And ingesting the products of the hive, there's tremendous amounts of just natural intelligence in the pollen, in the royal jelly. I mean, it's just mm-hmm. fascinating stuff. You know, the propolis.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you could go in. I mean, you could take your research into bees into infinity, and you would find so much. You'd never stop learning things. And you could go in a totally different direction and just study the nutritional aspects and just the vibrational aspects of these bee products, the products
mm-hmm.
of the hive, and
mm-hmm.
you could also go into infinity and continue to learn the fascination and the amount of like just mystery that exists in the hive and with honeybees is just incredible.
It is. I totally agree. The more you know, the more there is to know.
Yeah. And with that, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know you've got some hives to tend to today, but this is an amazing conversation. I hope the first of many.
Great. I agree. Thank you again for the opportunity. It's great work you're doing, and you know, keep it up.
Thanks, Noah. Again, I have Dr. Noah Wilson-Rich. Do you mind if I call you doctor?
I do not mind.
I have with me Dr. Noah Wilson-Rich. He is the founder of Best Bees Company, a Boston-based company that supplies and outfits honeybee hives on request. So look him up online at bestbees.com. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. And Noah will be happy to hook you up.
Great.
And Noah, thank you for joining me on the Best Vibrance, and enjoy your autumn day out there.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Same to you.
Okay, that's it, Noah. I'm gonna end it there.
Sure.
And I'll just edit it down, and you know, I'll clean it up and stuff, and I'll just, you know, you want to hear it before I publish it, or you just want me to just go ahead with it and just let you know when I...
You can go ahead and publish it.
Awesome.
No problem there. Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, you got my number. If you want to talk anytime, give me a call. I think you're an awesome guy. I love what you're doing. We're all on parallel paths. You know, we have different roles to play, but we're following a similar path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's great work. You know, I got a lot of respect for you and your interest and your mission, so keep it up. It's wonderful.
Right on. Okay. Well, again, enjoy your day, dude, and we'll talk again.
All right. Sounds good. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.
This has been episode number 6 of the Best Vibrance Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Breitbach. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to Dr. Noah Wilson-Rich, who was very generous with his time to inform us of his research in urban beekeeping. Very fascinating stuff. If you like what you've heard, please support our podcast by visiting www.hivemindpollen.com. Please order a supply of fresh pollen direct from our apiaries in Northern California. It's vacuum-packed fresh and shipped directly to you. The music you've been listening to was supplied by freemusicarchives.org. The name of the band is The Juanitos. The name of the song is Octopussy, and it is from their Exotica album. We'll be right back.